Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It is easy to leave a burning building when it is on fire. But what if that building contains the very thing that gives you life, excitement, peace, joy, courage, and wonder? Will you be an agent of change, or do nothing and eventually leave? If you work in Catholic ministry, business, or education, and need quality content on your website or social media pages, contact The Simple Catholic for copywriting services at thesimplecatholic.blog and click on the writing services page for more information. The Church Militant needs soldiers against the enemy. Enlist The Simple Catholic in this fight for the truth. Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today.
In this week's special audio cast, we find out how football can actually be a religious experience. So sit back and listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion as we talk about all things football, or better yet, the deeper meaning of football. And we're going to be joined with Super Bowl champ Matt Burke of the Baltimore Ravens. And we were at a conference together, sitting in the green room and having a deep discussion about how his faith was inspired and even purified by football. He's the guy, I'm sure you remember, when President Obama invited the Baltimore Ravens as the Super Bowl champions to the White House, he didn't show up, and this is what he said. I just wasn't there because he has a great respect for the office of presidency, but about a few weeks ago, the president commented about God blessing Planned Parenthood. And because he's an active pro-lifer, he just didn't show up. Not out of disrespect, but he just knows that when it comes to life, it ain't a game, even if it is a championship game. And so it's going to be awesome to hear from Matt Burke, because he has got a lot of things to offer. And this is a special show brought to you by Catholic Speakers Organization. You can find out more at catholicspeakers.com. It's the nation's leader for Catholic speakers and musicians and presenters, and you can have an amazing experience with a Catholic speaker just by going to catholicspeakers.com. And we will be back with Matt Burke for a deep dish discussion right here on Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. I have got with me Matt Burke, 2013 NFL champion with the Baltimore Ravens. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Father Leo.
Okay, so you're 6'5"?
6'5"-ish.
And how much do you weigh?
Well, right now, about 250.
And how much did you weigh when you were in the Super Bowl?
320.
Okay, being in the Super Bowl, first of all, I watch it. I like the food that's associated to the game, but what is it like? What goes on in your mind when you're playing? You've got literally a crowd of 50,000 people. What are you thinking?
Well, 50,000 and 100 million worldwide. Watching. You know, it's such a big stage, and you keep reminding yourself that even though it's the Super Bowl, it's just a game. You know, it's just like every other game. It's going to come down to blocking and tackling and just really going out there and executing your fundamentals, and that's what you just kept telling myself. That was very comforting, you know, to just to focus on my job, focus on my fundamentals, and don't worry about how big the stage is or about the result.
Did you get nervous though?
You know, it was kind of weird. You get nervous for every game. I mean, football is a hard game. It's dangerous. It's intense. And before the Super Bowl, for some reason, I had an amazing sort of calmness. I can't explain it. I don't know why. I don't have anything really to add to that, other than, yeah, here it was, the biggest stage, the biggest game of my life. I knew it was probably going to be the last game that I ever played.
What do you mean? Because you planned on retiring?
Yeah, I was pretty sure I was going to retire after the season. And it was just kind of this weird calmness came over me.
Okay, I want to ask a few questions just about the game itself, because, I mean, this might be controversial. Sorry for even throwing this at you, but it is a violent game, which is kind of why I like it more than I like watching baseball, to be honest with you.
No, it's not controversial. No, it is. It's a very violent game. It's physical, and there's something about it that football's unique in so many ways. One, you spend most of your time preparing. You know, you practice every single day. You only have – well, in the NFL, you have 16 games, but we work all year for 16 games. You know, it's not 162 like sure. baseball or 80. And most players don't touch the ball. You know, most you have a job that's not you're not the star. You know, most guys, it's the ultimate team game. But the physicality is something that will always be a part of football. We used to say it's a man whoop a man's game. You know, and normally the team that's more physical doesn't mean you're meaner. Or necessarily.
Yeah, let's get to that. Like, what is the, I mean, because obviously you have to have physical agility, but what about this kind of mental discipline that you have to develop? Were you like this growing up in high school? Was your dad's like, you got to play football, you got to bulk up?
No, not at all. Not at all. I wasn't pushed. And you know, I think a lot of times people don't really respond to that, right? But for me, what drew me to football, and I didn't start playing until I was in 10th grade, but it was belonging to that team, that core, and being a lineman too, you know, where nobody knows about you. Nobody cares about you. The only time they say your name is when you screw up. But when you do well, it's like the only one that really notices or cares is the other guys on the offensive line. That was special. And I just loved being a part of that group and just loved grinding, you know, eating big bowls of pasta and lifting heavy weights and just trying to get as big and as strong as we could. You know, that was
so some people would call that toxic masculinity. I'm getting into it. What are your thoughts?
No, you know what? Football gave me it gave me something to belong to. Mm. It gave me a framework, a discipline. You know, I mean, I mapped out everything, like how long I slept, my meals, my nutrition. I had all these healthy habits that I carried through today in my life. I think football teaches you that not only to be able to withstand discipline, but to actually want it, right? I think you have two kinds of discipline in your life. You're going to have the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. Hmm. And football players know about discipline. They know what it takes. So you do it day after day after day. When it's hard, you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and that's life, right? I mean, if you don't do anything worthwhile in your life, your relationships, you know, with your marriage or being a parent, right? You know that some days it's a grind, and you just have to keep going. And there's no, I mean, toxic masculinity. You know, in high school, we weren't going around getting in fights or bullying people. I mean,
you wouldn't bully like a guy like my size. Don't lie.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't even be a fair fight. You know, that'd be like, I mean, I'd be arrested for like, you know, cruel and unusual punishment.
Teasing small animals. So about football, because obviously we know about the game, but there's also so much we don't know. What would be some of like the things that surprised you when you got into NFL professional football playing?
It surprised me a little bit in the NFL, but it surprises everyone when I tell them that football is a very spiritual game.
Okay, now we're going to get to the Catholic thing in just a moment here, but just explain that first, and then I want to get into things that people do see, including the politics of it all. I just want to get an opinion.
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, it's going, football's a hard game, right? What happens when things get hard? What do we do as human beings? You know, we tend to, you know, look above and say, you know, God, help me. And I joke around and say football saved more people than Billy Graham.
Okay, well, explain that.
Well, I mean, like I said, when I was in the NFL, after my first 3 years in the NFL, I had more fame, more money, more worldly success than I ever thought would be possible. And yet I knew on the inside I was dying. I wasn't happy. I wasn't joyful. You know, everyone's going, oh, it must be great. You're playing in the NFL. It's like, oh, yeah, it's great. But then you kind of say, I'm not. Why don't I feel like it's great? Why don't I have that joy in my heart? And it was a God-shaped hole. I mean, I'd fallen away from my Catholic faith after high school, and it was ultimately, you know, football kind of brought me to my knees, where I was like, okay, I've tried to do everything else my own way, bought into the ways of the world. God, I need to come back.
Okay, so Matt Burke and I, we are speaking at a conference in Cincinnati. Obviously, you are Catholic. We're going to get a little bit more into that, but you said something brought you to your knees. Let's talk about dropping for the anthem on their knees. I just want to hear what I did there. Pretty good, huh? What are you thinking?
I was retired at the time, but, you know, for that, listen, you can go a million different ways with that. As a football player, what I didn't like about that was one of the core value of football is team. Nobody puts themselves above the team. And whatever you got going on, once you step into the locker room and once you step over the white line onto the field, you leave everything else behind, and all that matters is the game and the team. And what I didn't like about that was players using the platform of the NFL and the huge platform of this for something that they for themselves.
Yeah, it seemed very personal.
Very selfish. Every guy has causes that they work for that they're passionate about. And it was just – it was cheap. And it took the attention away from the team. It took the attention away from the game. And that violates the number one rule of football. And people ask me all the time about Colin Kaepernick. Oh, he's – you know, it's racism or
collusion. No, I didn't even bring up his name.
No, I know. But I'm, well, you know who we're talking about, right?
Sure.
Or collusion. He's not – I said – the reason why he doesn't have a job, is he good enough? Yeah, he's good enough to play. He's good enough to be on the team because he violated that core rule. And I'm just telling you, and I know guys in the locker room, a bunch of guys in the locker room will not accept him because he violated the code.
Okay, so this teamwork. Have there been times when on your team you really didn't like a guy? And how do you get past getting annoyed personally, but has still having to work as a team?
Well, in the NFL, you have 53 alpha males all together that have to come together to try to...
So there's 53. There's always got to be 53.
53. Okay. 53 alpha males all together, one goal. Most guys have a less than ideal role. You know, you only have 5 stars on your team. That means these guys, they were all stars at one point, but in the NFL, not everybody's a star. And so, yeah, 53... these personalities come together, certainly. You know, it's like a family. I mean, we spend so much time together during the season. You know everything about everybody. Even the guys you like start to annoy you after a while just because you're together for 10, 12 hours a day.
So let's talk about this family dynamic because right now also in politics and in the media, there's obviously the idea of family brokenness, including, for example, what about if there is someone who is homosexual or part of the LGBTQ community in the locker room with you? I just want to hear, I mean, I don't want to pick any fights. I just want to hear, like, how you, a good man, is dealing with that as part of your family.
So you know that if you've got 53 guys, you got white guys, black guys, brown guys, Christians, atheists, Muslims, I mean, whatever, right? People say, how do you get everybody to get along? We never had any sensitivity training. We don't have an HR department.
You're kidding.
No, because everybody just, this is baked into football where it's just like, hey, you know we're all different and we're going to respect each other's differences and we got a job to do. Now, once in a while, it might spill over where, you know, it gets a little personal and guys would go duke it out and then everything would be fine. But to your point specifically, my last year in the league, there was a marriage amendment in Maryland where I was playing and also in Minnesota where I was from about, quote, gay marriage. And so I wrote an op-ed for the newspapers in both of those.
I think I remember reading that.
And one of my teammates was very outspoken on the other side. And so I went up to him and I said, hey, I said, I want you to know this. I know where you stand on this issue. I stand on the other side. There's an op-ed coming out tomorrow that I wrote. And I said, I respect you. I hope you respect me. And the media is going to try to use this and try to, I said, well, we got a job to do. I said, we're trying to win a Super Bowl. And so I just want you to know how I feel about you and you know, I respectfully agree to disagree. And he was like, yeah, man, that's all good. What was really cool about that and what I think people could learn from, because we're just dumb football players, right?
Well, that's...
We're dumb football
players. No, you actually sound like you could run for Congress.
Well, what's funny is, so of course people are killing me.
Wait a minute, that wasn't an insult either, by the way, because a lot of congressmen are dumb. Congress people, excuse me.
And so people are killing me on social media, whatever. And is it Brandon Ayambadejo? He was actually defending me, saying, hey, Matt Burke, he's got, at the time, he has 6 kids, he homeschools them, he's a good man, right? And it was almost like him saying, like, hey, guys, we don't need to, like, just turn this into, you know, try World War III. Like, we could have a, Brandon and I could have a civil discussion about it. Why can't everybody else? Now, we know why not. I think this. Football players, it's not like we go out of our way to make people say, wow, those guys are really smart sometimes. But they probably don't give us enough credit. You know, we do know how to coexist, how to respect differences, and how to get along.
Sure. Now, this whole family dynamic and the team, I think part of it has to do with the culture of the head of that family. Tell me about what you think makes a good head coach. You've got, obviously, special teams coaches. You got, like, how many coaches are in the NFL?
Nowadays, there's, like... almost as many players. It's almost like every coach.
Well, that is what it seems like. That's what it seems like.
A great head coach, number one, I learned this from my first head coach, Dennis Green, who was fantastic. He said, my job is to create the atmosphere that you come to work in every day. Right? That's the culture. And that would be like, hey, I'm going to remove all distractions. I'm going to lay out, you know, what we value, what we're about. And then to play for John Harbaugh at the end, what John was great about was he'd come in for team meetings. I mean, every day you got to give a team meeting. He would talk about maybe sometimes about something you read in the Bible that morning. Maybe it was some stupid video on YouTube. Maybe it was a World War II story. And he would say, hey, guys, I read this morning in the Bible. It might not be your thing. That's all right. He was great at saying, we want everybody in here to be yourself, to let your personality shine. We're not trying to get anybody to damper down or be anybody they're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Just understand that we're all here for, this is the goal, to win the Super Bowl. But be yourself. And so he helped foster that respect. I mean, we would disagree. He would disagree. We'd have debates openly in front of the whole team, and we'd air it all out. There was no, like...
These are some of the hidden things that people don't see. I mean, we see Goldie Hawn, how she led the Wildcats, I think, in that movie.
That movie was not real, Father. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Well, but yeah. I mean, but there's these sentiments that we're hoping that someone like that can inspire. So besides being real and being letting you be honest, what are some of the other qualities you're looking for a coach? Because you got to agree to play for that coach.
Yeah, you do. And one is you're professional, so you're going to play. You're getting paid to do a job. But a great head coach in the NFL will inspire you beyond. And I think that's what John was able to do. What's great about him is he cuts right to it. There's no BS with him. And so when you're talking to him, you're talking to a real guy. And it's like you connect. Him and I used to talk about family. We would talk about faith. We would talk about all sorts of stuff. But then out in the field, like if John Harbaugh yelled at me, if I did something wrong or he needed more out of me, he didn't think I was giving him everything that I had, he would yell at me. And I'd say, you know what, because we had that personal relationship, I would say, yeah, you know what, he's right, and I got to do that. Like I wanted to please him. As funny as that sounds, you know, I was a 36-year-old man, but I wanted to please him because I felt like he had earned my respect, and therefore I wanted to play as hard as I could for him.
So personal relationship, when we come back, I'm going to talk about your personal relationship to Jesus Christ when we return with more Shoot the Shiitake and Matt Burke. And I hope you're enjoying this Deep Dish discussion with Matt Burke. And if you enjoy our content, please, I encourage you to support us on patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. And also tell family and friends to subscribe to this podcast on their favorite podcast platform. And also, if you are interested in bringing us out for a Feed My Faith event in your neck of the woods, all you've got to do is reach out to us at FatherLeoFeeds.com and stay hungry. Hey, we are back with Matt Burke, NFL 2013 champion with the Baltimore Ravens, and he's talking about his personal relationship with his coach. And I've also noticed this. Let's put it this way. You span the crowd. There used to be that famous guy standing there with the John 3:16 in the crowd. I want to hear about your experience of faith. You said that football is ultimately a spiritual thing. It looks pretty violent to me, but why are so many of the players always recognizing God?
Yeah, well, because, so I would say football, it's violent. It's a struggle, right? And that's us, right? We're here on earth. We're struggling. A lot of times it's a struggle. I say football bring you to your knees. And I think most guys, after a while, they figure, well, they might as well just start there. Right?
Yeah, but we also see a lot of the guys really screw up.
But you don't see that many. See, that's the thing. I mean, you could talk about 1,800 players in the NFL.
Good point.
How many guys really get into trouble every year? 10?
Yeah, but they do make it big on the news. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they get news, but the arrest rates and let's just call it the overall bad behavior. I'm not saying we're choir boys, right? You're talking about rich, young, famous guys with money in their pockets. But a lot of guys, the rates of incidents is a lot lower than general population for that age group. But I'd say this, football's so hard. There's all this pressure. You have these high highs and these low lows. And I think sooner or later, guys, right, all of our hearts long for what's real. Right, for the truth. And so you might try to do things your way, and after a while, there's all these guys in the locker room. They've got Bibles in their locker. There's a team chaplain.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for inviting me, by the way.
I didn't have that kind of pull. We didn't know.
I'm kidding. We're with you.
Three of the four head coaches I played for were Catholics. We had Catholic Mass in the hotel in the mornings of the games.
Wow.
And it's kind of like, you know, right? It's influence, right? You see these guys, you see these veterans walking around with Bibles going to Bible study. If I'm a young player, you say, you know what, that guy, I admire that guy. Not because of what he's doing on the field. Like, he might be a great player. He might be a marginal player. But he just seems like, as a man, you know, he's got something I want. And so I think sooner or later, a lot of younger guys gravitate towards that.
But faith is, I mean, you go to church and it's all so feminine. There's so many more women than there are men, unless male football players going to church. I mean, probably because you're going to Catholic Mass with your team. But what do you say about that? I mean, because you're saying that football being a rough sport requires faith.
Well, yeah. I mean, life's a rough sport. The problem specifically to men is, like, we need to wake up, right? The world's telling us what – the world's definition of success is way different than what real success is. You know, it's not about driving a certain car, belonging to a certain country club, or making a certain amount of money, right? I mean, our responsibilities as men, first and foremost, would be the spiritual leaders of our household. And so I don't know. I mean, we got too many guys sitting around playing video games and just kind of doing whatever, right? They're distracted and kind of checked out. Like in the NFL, you can't check out. Like, if you check out, you can get your head knocked off. And so I think we're, like, it's just everything's so intense and you can't relax for a second. I think that also, too, lends itself to a lot of guys really actively seeking out and developing their relationship with God, because they know, like, everything is happening in real time, and you can't afford to have an off day.
Just a quick piece of advice for parents with kids who want to play football. It is becoming quite the thing of, is it too dangerous for my kid? I mean, just maybe as a parent, because you've got 8 kids, right? And some of them are probably going to want to play football.
They already do. Yeah, I couldn't stop my boys from playing football if they wanted to. I say this, youth football is not like what you see on Sunday, okay? I mean, I coached third graders last year. We didn't have one hit all year. It was more like warm hugs where they fall to the ground. So go watch it. Go talk to the coaches and make sure you feel good about the coach, that he or she knows what they're doing, that they have your child's safety in mind. I mean, my whole thing with youth football is, if kids are going to play youth football, we want them to get better and have fun and play next year.
What about high school football?
Well, I tell youth coaches, don't screw them up. Let them get to high school.
Yeah.
And then the high school coaches, those are professional coaches. And those guys are doing it. 99% of those guys are Christian guys who that's their calling. You know, that's their vocation, is to coach high school football. High school football, you don't get paid anything, unless you're in Texas. But you don't get paid anything.
Brought to you by Texas football.
It's a full-time job that gets in the way of your full-time job. Mm. They're doing that because they want them to have a positive impact in that kid's life. And most of them, that means helping save their soul. And so I say, listen, we have too many kids that are, youth sports is out of control, right? Too many kids dropping out of sports. They're being told to specialize. The great thing about football is you can't specialize in football. You can't play football 12 months a year. It's in the fall, and that's it. Football is a great game that, and here's the thing too, even if you never play, I didn't play till high school. Whenever you start playing football, there's room for big guys. There's room for small guys. We need fast guys. We need tough guys. We need kickers. Like, basically every kind of skill set, if you're willing to pay the price, meaning to go out there and practice, you know, practice every day, and it's mostly practice, and pay the price, that coach is going to find a job for you on offense, on defense, on special teams. There's a place for everybody on a football team, and that's another thing that makes it a beautiful game.
Mom of a soccer-playing girl wants to be a kicker.
Well, why not?
You think that NFL should open it up too?
Well, not. I mean, NFL. I mean, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I mean, men and women are different, right? We're talking about playing at the highest
level.
Sure,
of course.
Okay, but I mean, I think if girls want to play tackle football when they're kids, as long as everybody's on board, you know, I mean, it's the same standard for everybody. I think that's fine. But
you grew up with a lot of America Plains, Midwest values. Do you think that makes a difference ultimately in the kind of player that comes out? Someone either from inner city rough versus those that are kind of like middle America values.
That's a great question. You know, I've grown up in Minnesota in the Midwest. You know, I've always said I always want my linemen from the Midwest, you know, corn-fed, steak-eating farm boys, right? You know, Nebraska, Iowa's got some good linemen.
Seriously?
And then give me my skill guys from Miami or Southern California. And I mean, that's kind of stereotyping, but it's kind of true, too. That's a cool thing because, again, football, you get players from all over, all different kinds, all different personalities. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to, football's really a game of attrition. And I'm not talking about against the other team. It's against yourself. When you start playing football in grade school or in high school, not everybody makes it. You know, during training camp, guys quit. And so it's like, are you tough enough? And toughness can manifest itself in many forms. It can come from many different places. But as long as you are willing to pay that price of admission, which is to put it on the line and go through that training camp and practice every single day, even when you don't feel good, then you can be on the team.
And you grew up kind of you grew in your faith, from what I understand. You basically said you didn't really, you know, practice your faith growing up. But what changed then? What exactly made you become such a good Catholic that you're, as Jim Gaffigan would call, a jihad Catholic with eight kids?
No, I mean, I was raised Catholic in Catholic school and never missed Mass once. And then when I got to college, kind of started to wander and buy into the ways of the world. And after a couple years in the NFL, you know, Juana talked about kind of having that moment where, wow, I've had everything I ever dreamed of and I'm miserable.
So what brought you to – I don't get that. A lot of people may not understand. I mean, you had everything. What do you mean by not having something?
Well, I think you think like, well, I've accomplished all my dreams and goals. Why am I not – why is every day not best day ever? Why am I not living my best life, Oprah? Huh? And then you find out, well, the one thing that's missing, right? And I wasn't made, right? I wasn't made to – make money or be famous or whatever, right? I mean, I'm here to know, to love, and to serve God, and I wasn't doing any of those things. I was only looking out for number one. I wasn't stepping on number two, but I was, and so a couple things happened. One, kind of hit this moment where I was like, all right, something's got to change. Two, I met a woman who ended up becoming my wife, and then, you know.
And that'll do it.
And, you know, it's kind of, okay, wow, now this is not just about me. And then you start having kids, and then it's like, well, okay. It was a series of things. You know, you've been talking to me for a while. I'm not that smart. I'm just a dumb football player. So God was like, all right, I'm gonna have to really spell it out for you, right? So He gave me everything I ever wanted. He said, see, it's not working.
Dumb, and you're still not happy,
dummy. So now try it my way.
So you retired from football at the age of
36.
And at present, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Almost 43.
Okay. And now what are you doing? What does a guy do after winning a freaking Super Bowl champion?
Well, I mean, we have eight kids.
So that keeps you busy.
Period. That's a full-time job. And then, you know, I do a lot of speaking, particularly to Catholic groups. Starting a Catholic high school, which is going to open this fall.
Tell me about that, too, because I think if people from Minnesota are listening, they'll want to sign the kids up.
Yeah, we're opening this fall Unity High School, and basically we'll be a vigorously Catholic, affordable high school in the South Metro. And our education model, what makes us different is on Wednesdays we call it Real World Wednesdays, where we don't do traditional academics, but we do things character, service, entrepreneurship, home ec, shop, theater.
We call that formation,
and we call that yes. Albert Einstein once said, "The thing that got in way of my learning is my education."
And, you know, so true.
And so we really want to focus on learning and really cultivating the skills that kids need, not just to get into college, but to have great lives, and that starts with the Catholic faith.
So besides starting up high school, which is what every NFL retiree does, right?
Well, I have so many kids to put through high school. I thought this actually be cheaper for me in the long run if I just start one to begin with. But
what else are you doing, though? Because I know you're doing you're speaking, you're starting this high school, which both are kind of full-time jobs, but...
But what
you're doing an e-team?
Oh, I have an esports team. It's more of a fun thing. We have a bunch of athletes and celebrities who.
No, I think for parents who are listening and they want their kids to. I mean, look, kids are going to want to play video games, have some influence like yourself.
Well, yeah, we do. There's some positivity with our guys and trying to. The thing about video games, I know a lot of parents out there are fighting this fight, and I'm fighting it too. You know, one, you know, everything in balance and moderation, of course, but. The reason why video games is so popular, what I've learned studying this community for the last 2 years, is kids want to belong. And a lot of kids don't feel like they have anywhere to belong. You know, at school and on social media, there's a lot of the cliques and we'll call it bullying now. But, you know, a lot of kids are just, they're having a hard time finding their place in the world. And so they gravitate towards the video games because it's digital and it's sort of like all the barriers are taken down. It doesn't matter if you're a great athlete or a great student or you're the most popular or whatever. Like in the video game world, everybody's kind of the same.
Sure.
And so I think that's really what kids are longing for. And I think we need to recognize that and say, okay, now that's a great way for us to talk to our kids and say, hey, look, you want to, you know, where you ultimately belong is you're one of God's children. And God made you for a specific reason, and embrace that and embrace God's love and let his grace work in your life.
So obviously the football is even coming out in the name of your school, Unity High School, right?
Yes.
Unity High School. But you're also something that a lot of people may not know. You're dabbling in the comedic life.
I've been doing stand-up comedy for about a year and a half.
Is it because you stand taller?
I can stand up, yes, and I know what comedy – I did it on a dare, and it didn't go horribly, and so I do it now for charity. It's called the Do Good Comedy Tour. Mm. We're either for causes that I'm involved with or other causes. They basically hire us at the price of $0,
Great, because I'm inviting you to our Table Foundations dinner.
Let's go. Let's go. It's a fun way. You know, listen. You know, laugh, it's a gift, right? I mean, we got to laugh. With comedy, it normally works better when the audience is drinking, which is
nice.
Another gift of our faith.
We're Catholic.
Yeah, so and for me, I think I should have a drink or two before I do comedy. It's kind of like stretching for a comedian, you know, a drink or two. It's a fun night. It's a fun way to raise money for good causes.
I'll be honest with you, Matt. It's exhausting hearing your life. You've got, you're a dad of 8 kids. You've got 3 separate entrepreneurial companies, plus doing this charity work with comedy, but you also are now involved in food. You've got a cookie company and a bourbon company.
Yeah, it's, you know what? Life's a team game. You know, you don't do anything by yourself. None of this stuff happens if it's just me.
Yeah, you're pretty much an overachiever, though.
I know how to be a good teammate. I think I know what a good teammate looks like. So those are the kind of people that I tend to partner with in endeavors. And ultimately, you know what? I mean, we're just here trying to do good, trying to discern God's will for my life and try to improve other people's lives as much as I can. And
so last question, at Burke Matt on social media, because some guy named Matt Burke stole it.
He's like some teenager. You know, whatever.
You could take him, though. You could take him. So at Burke Matt on Twitter and on Instagram as well, right?
Yeah, I am, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
so last question. What can I – we've met last night for dinner. You were making fun of me because you're just a white, tall, privileged man.
The first shot was from you.
Well, that's because, I mean, I have the short man syndrome,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, the little guy syndrome.
It's the only chance you have to throw the first punch.
That's it. But you know me. I'm a priest. What can I, as a Catholic priest, do to help you?
I mean, me personally or just in general?
Whatever you think. Just like, I'm a Catholic priest. How can I be a good priest for you?
Well, I think just you being you. I think so many men, let's face it, where most of our men are at, the ones who identify with still being Catholic but might not be very active or on fire for the faith, they know that they've fallen away. So they're intimidated when they go back to church. They have the guilt and the shame right inside. They wouldn't articulate it that way. So when they see priests and someone's like, oh, gee, you know, Father, right, he's gonna judge me. He's gonna tell me I gotta come to confession and say 1,000,000 Hail Marys because I'm so bad. And I think right, as humans, what do we crave? We crave connection. We crave relationship. One with our Creator, and then two with other human beings. And so for you, just to be you and be, even though you're a priest, though, right? You're a real guy, right? You're a real guy. You can laugh. You can joke, right? You can wrestle if you want. I mean, you're talking about
not in this day's world.
You know, I think just being a real guy, because we long for the authentic, we long for the truth. And I think as a priest, you know, priests are men too, right? I mean, I know I'm stating the obvious.
Last time I checked.
But I think we forget that a lot of times. There's like a disconnect between the clergy and the laity, and we feel like we can never really have a real relationship. It's more one of those things where it's like, I see you as I'm leaving Mass. I say, oh, thank you, Father, and I try to rush away.
Yeah.
And I think that fraternity is important for men, and that's what we're doing here today at the Cincinnati Men's Conference, is allowing men to have that real fraternity with each other.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Burke Matt on social media, Matt Burke. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And when I return, I am going to give you my carryout order. What did I learn from this crazy conversation with an alpha male seeking to be a saint? And a welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for my carryout order as I chatted with Matt Burke and just learned a lot from him. You know, football is something that I kind of played growing up as a kid, but wasn't really good at it, wasn't really good at, you know, at basketball either. You know, karate was my main sport, very physical, and I can actually say that studying martial arts did teach me a lot about my spirituality, and I'm just grateful that Matt was able to use his gift, his talent, and his experiences to help him to be a better man. I mean, the amount of work that he does now after the Super Bowl, he retired from it all, but he learned so much from it that he's taken his expertise, and he really is a businessman. And I think the stereotype is just unfortunate how, you know, football players and jocks in general are just dumb. And that's hardly the case. I think football, you've got to be smart. And one of the ways you got to be smart is by recognizing that you are part of a team. And that was a really important lesson for me. What exactly did it mean to be part of a team, especially when it's made up of such great diversity of opinions and even lifestyles? And ultimately, he knew that it wasn't about him, but it was about really winning the championship and making sure that even though he's not going to be the superstar athlete, the most well-known person on the team, he was certainly a part of it. And I think that is, for me, the greatest carry-out order. We are all literally part of a team. And I want you, you know, as we bring the show to a close, think about who your team is, whether it be your family, whether it be co-workers, whether it be even a sports team, and how do you contribute to it by bringing the best out in them? Because that's how you make a champion. And you know, this episode is brought to you by CatholicSpeakers.com. It's the nation's leader in providing presenters and speakers and musicians for your special event. So you can learn more at CatholicSpeakers.com. And again, want to thank you for listening. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I was incredibly inspired. Thanks again to Matt Burke for taking the time and sitting with me in the green room and just basically doing an interview off the fly. It was pretty awesome to meet someone at his stature, and that guy is huge, let me tell you. You can check out those pictures on Facebook and then on Instagram. Follow me at FatherLeoFeeds.com, and you can also book me at one of your events. So make sure that you spread this podcast far and wide, and between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.